Jackson. Tonight, I am joined by Sean Darenthal, a former NBA scout and current podcaster for The Stepien. What's up, Sean?
Not much, man. Thanks for having me on.
No, absolutely. Thanks for being here. You have actual NBA experience, so I think that's invaluable. Actually, so you were a scout for the post-process Sixers. I guess anything after Hinkie gets fired counts as post-process in my mind.
Okay.
Sure. So we're gonna say that's post-process. So what was that experience like, and how do you think it informed the way you look at prospects?
The experience was incredible. It was the kind of dream that you kind of think it's going to be for the most part. That at that time, like, it was, so I came in right after the Colangelo thing and he was out. And when I first got in, they didn't really have a GM. There was like a long period where they didn't really officially have one until they got Elton. So yeah, it was weird. It was smaller than it is now. They've like hired a bunch more people, so it's kind of like a different vibe when I talk to my friends that still work there. But it was just cool. It was like me and this other guy got hired to do like video scouting stuff, and we just sat down, like talked about stuff all the time. We had meetings. Like, the rest of the scouts were super great guys. I made a bunch of friends with like the analytics guys, cause I have some analytics background stuff. And it was just an incredible experience. I learned a bunch. I don't know, like, the question about how does that inform my scouting now? Honestly, like, I would love to tell you that I learned the secrets of basketball or something. there were lots of people around me that were very good at this. So, you know, like, just kind of picking up little things here or there, or being challenged on some of my ideas, sitting in a room with some of these guys and having to justify my stance or opinion on people, you know, that was kind of refining. But I don't know that I like learned anything big, except for, I will say that I think most of the stuff that people assume teams have that's like super valuable, this like wonderful scouting advantage, particularly for the draft, because, you know, it's like it's a whole nother world, and these like college guys are kind of, they're not as accessible as NBA people, you know. There's like this assumption, I think, that, you know, medicals and all this background information tell you all this stuff, and there's all this information that the team has about their development system and blah, blah, blah. I will say that even from the front office side, there's almost as much uncertainty as there is from the public side. Like, the best predictor of NBA success by a large margin is still just the film, right? And they watch the same film that we can get on YouTube or Synergy account or whatever, right? So and then the background information that they collect, I mean, yeah, they have access to some things that maybe you won't hear publicly, but that stuff generally doesn't matter unless the guy is like a real negative character guy, like a serious negative character guy. And then, of course, their medicals, you know, that's important too. But anyway, yeah, I would just say, like, don't get discouraged because, like, you don't have what they have, or somehow they knew something that you didn't know, or blah, blah, blah. 99% of the time, it's just like, you know, the luck of the draft situation, like evaluating prospects. And like, you have the same, you're standing on pretty much equal footing as teams when it comes to drafting players, I think.
You heard it here first, people. 20 minutes on YouTube and you too can have the knowledge of an NBA scouting department.
I mean, that's not what I said, but yeah, sure.
So you are the host of the Stepien podcast. The Stepien's a great website for NBA draft scouting and analysis. I've noticed from your podcast, the podcasts that you have that are not part of your Patreon, which people should go subscribe to, and I'm going to ask you about later, you are not nearly as, I'm going to put this nicely, you're not nearly as effusive as some of the other people on draft Twitter that I read and listen to. Is that by design? You just feel like, is that more honest?
Yeah, it's definitely not by design. Like, I'm not trying to be that way. I just hope that I am as grounded like, I'm trying to be as right as I can on average, right? So mm-hmm. it's like, it's not easy to do. Obviously, this is, it's like, it's thinking about it like, you know, like baseball, like your on base percentage, you know, I mean, it's not great, right? Like the best players are on like 45% of the time or less, right? So like, it's not easy to predict who's going to be good and who's not going to be good. But like, that is my goal, is to do the best that I can. So being rooted in realistic evidence about who's going to be good and how good they're going to be. Like, for instance, the first overall pick only has a 60% chance to make a single All-Star game, right? If you want a starter on like a good team, finding that in the top 10 is not easy. After that, it's very, very improbable. So I guess I just look at it as like, my prior is that most of these guys will not develop relative to their peers from where they are right now. So if you're like asking a guy, oh, this guy's young, he'll develop a shot or he'll develop, you know, XYZ skill, the odds are that he won't develop that faster than his peers are developing that. So if he's already behind in that, then he's like at a massive disadvantage. That's just the, you know, the real of the NBA draft. There's 60 guys drafted and not that many guys get a second contract. So I'm just trying to be realistic. I'm not trying to be negative. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. And I didn't mean to imply that you were negative, but you hear,
oh, yeah. No, it's cool.
you hear a lot of like lofty comparisons for guys at the top of the draft, and you don't hear that as much from you, right?
Yeah. I stay away from comparisons, not because they can't be used well. Like if you're trying to convey maybe like how a certain guy does a certain skill, like how it looks or the efficiency of it, or just like general value kind of in a vacuum, comparisons can be valuable, but mm-hmm. they're just dangerous because it doesn't really communicate a ton. And it's just too easy to kind of pick apart, and like communicating ideas through comparisons is usually pretty fraught, I found. So I just kind of stay away from that. Yeah. And definitely like most comparisons when people are doing them, it's like, yeah, they're comparing it to the people that come to mind or that maybe aesthetically the player in college looks like. And that's usually going to be like an all-star. You know what I mean? Like most of the comparisons, like at least 50% of them are to all-star players, which is obviously super unrealistic, right?
Right. It, two guys people watch play a lot of basketball. Not necessarily guys they don't watch play exactly. basketball.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So with that said, is Cade Cunningham the best prospect in this year's draft class?
Yes. Yes, okay. I think he is. And I think it's pretty straightforward. There are some compelling arguments that I've heard against it. However, I've never heard them coupled with an argument for another player. Like Cade's not a perfect prospect, and he has, you know, a downside like everybody else, but the overlap of his downside can't be overcome by like some wonderful upside of some other prospect in this draft.
What are his downsides?
Okay, let's start here.
Let's start there.
Okay. So like one obvious thing is turnovers, right? Statistically, you see that pretty clearly. His high turnovers, I think some large portion of those, I don't know, we could go 50-50 here. We could go 60-40. Some large portion of those are attributable to the difficult scenario that he found himself in at Oklahoma State. There's some decent arguments that it wasn't as bad as everyone says, but when you watch the film, like the spacing is bad. The finishing of his teammates was really bad. He was constantly being either just overtly doubled or, you know, two or three other guys were loading to him at all times. So there's a lot of stuff where he was trying to force stuff because either he had to, or I don't know, he wanted to. Like in high school, when you go back, he wasn't doing the same thing. It felt like he was a more willing passer in high school. So it leads me to believe that there was some pressure on him to create more, or maybe he misinterpreted pressure, right, to create more. But then the other chunk of the turnovers are, you know, his fault for sure. Stuff where he just gets that early double or gets some pressure from a longer, stronger athlete who he's going up against, which was rare, but happened for sure. And he would, you know, an errant dribble off of his heel or pick up his dribble too early and get smothered and make a bad pass or, anticipating a teammate's movement where he didn't go and maybe it wasn't his fault or something, but he just threw it out into the stands, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's a problem. And then I think the other big criticism that's, I think, really valid to kind of that caps maybe some super, super upside that he has is his cross section of athleticism, flexibility, and strength isn't ideal for the best on-ball creators in the NBA, which is the kind of role that Cade hopefully projects into. Not all number one overall picks like are these people. The average overall pick is like worse than like a Paul George, obviously like a Luka Doncic, guys like that, right? Mm-hmm. But these big wings that can create with the ball, they often have some combination of flexibility, strength, and athleticism that allows them to have multiple options and be able to react quickly no matter how you guard them with one, usually like one and a half guys, and they'll pass when they're hard doubled, right? Or sometimes score through a hard double. That threshold of whatever combination he has of lack of flexibility, although his flexibility is I think probably the strongest of those three skills. His strength lags behind a little bit what you think it kind of is relative to how well he uses his physicality, what physicality he has, like off of bumps and stuff like that. He's really good at body control and that kind of thing. And then his athleticism, which is kind of slightly below what you kind of hope for in these wing size initiators. The combination of those three skills doesn't kind of amount to what you see in a Kawhi and a Paul George. So, you know, that limits a little bit his ceiling. Those things could improve. They could look different in a different context. But I think right now, as you evaluate his college film, those are kind of the two big knocks against him, or at least against that super, super high ceiling that we're hoping for him.
Right, right. How much? So we can split the baby on the turnovers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. If he's going to be a primary initiator at the next level, how much of the 50% of his turnovers that are directly or indirectly attributable to his teammates can we expect to see? Like, I think when I watch Cade, I see like a very good passer, right? Not mm-hmm. necessarily like an elite level passer, but a very good passer in college. But all his teammates are not very good, and he's being triple teamed all the time with single coverage with, you know, one and a half guys instead of like 2.25 guys or something like that, with mm-hmm. with better teammates, with better NBA spacing, will we see an elite level passer, or will he still kind of be a very good passer in your eyes?
So I think that he is probably like in that class of like elite level passers that I've evaluated from college. He's as good as Ben Simmons was, I think. He's like a tick below Trey and a tick below Luka. And there are some other guys that you could put in there and that were above him, but just, you know, just like for a point of reference for other people that may have seen those guys like pre-NBA. And the one thing that like worries me a tad, well, let me just say, he makes all of the kind of advanced passes that you want like a lead initiator to get to, particularly out of the pick and roll, like the skips, cross court, weak side corner stuff, that's all there. The really easy, I get doubled quickly, I can just one man away or two men away, kind of the shorter skip pass, that stuff definitely happens. The kickouts, he's strong enough, and he like the blind side kickouts where he kind of anticipates somebody's going to be behind him or fill some spot behind him. Kick out, like that's like Luka's thing, right? He could find anybody anywhere in the court. Cade, I think, has those things. The one thing that kind of pulls back a little bit is that most of the great passers, they passed to space where they knew a guy should be. And so they kind of would either move their teammates there or was just thinking earlier than the defense. So the defense, while the defense is rotating toward the nail or whatever to like tag the Roman, usually that guy on the weak side, right? He's coming on the baseline to tag the Roman to help if they're going to guard the pick and roll with three. He comes over. And so that skip pass to the weak side is open. Most of the time, like LeBron, he's hitting that. James Harden, always doing this. He's hitting it as that guy just starts his momentum to the middle of the court to tag the Roman. So, you know, you're maximizing the shooting window for that guy. Obviously, that's a longer pass, so it's longer in the air, gives more time for the guy to recover, blah, blah, blah. Cade is mostly passing. I mean, that happens sometimes that he like really anticipates the defense or like reads it really quick and gets that pass out early. Most of the time, though, he's passing to already open players, which really significantly cuts down that window because NBA defenders are already waiting for that, right? They're like, they're keying on that. So they're sitting at the nail already and they're saying, all right, like, where are you going to go? Because I'm ready to recover back off my dig. So like, that's kind of problematic and it will make all of those wonderful passes that he can make and that he can read fine, just like a little bit less valuable because he's giving people less time. And there's those spectacular passes, where he's like creating an advantage that wasn't really there because a guy is looking the other way. And so he passes one of his teammates open. That stuff didn't happen as much. Again, this could be the context at OSU, but I do think there's something there where like, he's just kind of a tick below those super elite guys of the NBA. He'll still be great, but he won't be maybe the Trey or the Luka.
Right. I mean, like there are a lot of worlds between like Luka and I don't know who doesn't pass. Somebody who doesn't pass.
Kevin Durant's an often like people don't tag him so much for this, but he's not an amazing passer.
Yeah.
Right. Like, but he's still good, but he's kind of that next tier or maybe two tiers down from those elite guys.
And you can still be elite as a primary and have like weaknesses, right? I'm not trying to eliminate all traces of Cade's weaknesses. I'm actually curious about them. And in order to find ways to shore them up around him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. Like, yeah.
Because the Pistons, presumably, going to take Cade. They have another primary initiator in Killian Hayes that they just selected last year. You would presume that the ball handling duties between those two guys get split and that defenses are not as able to key on one of them simply because both of them as ball handlers are on the floor at the same time. Is that a pairing that you see working at the next level?
Theoretically, like if both of those guys hit like really good outcomes, right? They both become super valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. Mostly because Cade is already a really good shooter and projects to probably get even better in that area. Off the dribble, spot up stuff, like his touch is really, really good. And then if Killian kind of hits some of his higher end valuable outcomes, it definitely involves like some shooting improvement, right? So maybe he's not going to be an incredible shooter or doesn't project to be. Definitely could be, but probably not. But as long as he's passable and good and has some gravity off ball, and is able to, you know, pull up a little bit if guys are going under on the pick and roll. Because if you can't pull up, that's like death for like an on-ball initiator, right? Like you have to have this guy in the NBA follow you over the screen, or like so many passes and so many plays just aren't there or just don't work. So in the scenario in which both of them are good, yeah, for sure, it's not a problem to have both of these guys. You know, they help space for each other. They're both good passers. You know, strong side, you create an advantage. You get doubled, you whip it to the second side, and he's going against a disadvantaged defense. Like the best offenses in the league often have, you know, multiple creators like this that can go strong side, second side. Like that's not a problem. That's ideal. The problem is going to be if Killian can't shoot, Cade is probably the better playmaker overall. So like, it's not going to be in terms of like, you want to optimize your your best player usually is like the way to optimizing your team, mm-hmm. right? So then Killian will probably, it won't be like, let's optimize Killian, give him more on-ball reps because he's not as great of an off-ball shooter, and let's have Cade space. Like, that would just limit your team, right? So like you would definitely do it the other way around, and Killian would just get less minutes. And that's fine. You guys are young and you're building slow, which is cool and exciting, I think. So, I mean, you know, just like reps now and like lose games intentionally, fine. Like, do it. Let your young guys, as they get better, pull you out and then add veterans or whatever. So, yeah.
Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I have become more concerned about Killian's low end outcomes after this year. I don't know how likely it is, but it's definitely like more likely than it was, or than I thought it was like a year ago, at least.
Can I just ask you real quick, like, what do you and just the fan base in general think of him?
The fan base is split. There are a lot of people who see what they were billed was French D'Angelo Russell. And they didn't get that. And so they're like, this guy sucks. Right? Or they're like, this is tall Ricky Rubio. And they're like, that's fine, but that's not like what I wanted or what this team needed. Right. And then there's the other side. It's more optimistic. I find myself closer to the optimistic side, but I was also like ridiculously high on Killian coming into the year, or coming into to the class. And so I've been forced to temper that. But you look at the ability to like manipulate in the pick and roll. You look at the fact that like he really only wants to do one thing, and defenses know that he really only wants to do one thing, and yet he still gets away with it. I think that's kind of ridiculous. And it points more to, if he ever gets proficient at anything else, it'll be a nightmare for defenses to try and cover. But that question about will he get proficient with anything else is a big one, is a big open one. So I remain optimistic, but less optimistic than I was when he was initially drafted. We'll say that much.
Yeah, that's fair. I just one like... Just to not that I'm like optimistic or pessimistic, really. Like, I wasn't.
Well, yeah, you're not a fan of the team. I get it.
I wasn't scouting heavily that year. Like, I kind of just did like peripherally. I'm kind of jumping back in this draft year, but I don't really have any like stock in him one way or the other. But I will say, like, in my draft modeling in the past, the first year impact stats, like all-in-one metrics, don't correlate that much to your career peak. Like, years, the average of like 3 and 4 of the impact metrics correlate much more highly, and like they do very highly actually to career peaks. So, you know, lots of people have bad rookie years, so I wouldn't just don't sweat it. I mean, there weren't as many flashes as you'd like to see, for sure.
Yeah,
but I would just say overall, like, don't sweat it.
Yeah, and the injury obviously like took away a lot of that. I think you could see like as the year went on, and he got as the end of the year came up, and you know, teams are not necessarily like scouting the Pistons particularly hard or playing their guys particularly hard. You could see him find success doing things, and you could see him building on things. And it would have been nice to have him have an entire season to build upon instead of like a third of one, essentially. But you know, you take what you're given, right? that's how I feel. What else was I going to ask you? One thing that I noticed about Cade and just watching him is that Oklahoma State kind of just posted him up randomly. I think that's a funky way to get a primary initiator involved. Do you think he'll be able to do that at the NBA level at his size? Or does that still kind of remain just like inherently so inefficient that it's not worth trying?
No, I think, in fact, it's been a trend in the NBA. it kind of spiked a little bit this season and has been trending up over the past few seasons, that as attempts from centers posting up have gone down, like that shot is, you know, out of the repertoire of, not completely out, but, you know, leaving the repertoire of many NBA teams.
Mm-hmm.
Posting up, particularly when one of your bigger creators has a mismatch advantage, posting that guy up to playmake out of that scenario, because NBA teams still double that action aggressively for some reason. In the playoffs, you see them do it less because, you know, it's more about, I don't know, they're less instinctive about it. There's like more intentionality and like all of the specific rotations that you want to have when or whatever, you know, and all the micro situations that you have during a playoff game. But during regular season, people still aggressively double that for whatever reason. And Luka did a lot of efficient offense getting posted on, you know, when particularly he was playing like a smaller guard. And that's definitely something that, I mean, of course, LeBron does it. Jokic does it. I mean, I'm cherry picking kind of the best
examples.
League,
yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's definitely reasonable for K to do that. Now, again, I talked a little bit about the strength not being as functional as you like. However, his coordination in using bumps and his physicality is good. So I imagine that kind of thing can improve a lot. And he probably will be a threat to score, particularly with just like a one-legged fadeaway. I can't imagine him not developing that, not being able to go to that off of, like, again, you know, when the mismatch is there, going to that action. So he's a threat to score. And then if you double him, he passes very easily out of those situations, because that's what you want, right? You want that double team. So he's anticipating that. I think that it could be a great thing potentially, right? Depending on how he kind of develops and his teammates around him. But yeah, that could work for sure.
No. Yeah. Okay. That's good. I had not noticed the league-wide trends. Again, like you mentioned LeBron, and LeBron's kind of old now, and this was always kind of in my mind, like, this is always kind of what LeBron was going to end up doing when he turned 38, just posting up weaker dudes and passing out of double teams for the rest of his life. And you probably do that at least 45. But you look at a guy like Devin Booker, right? Devin Booker is not the tallest or the strongest or the fastest creator in the league, but he makes a lot of hay out of posting up, and he's not even like an amazing passer. He's turned himself into a decent passer, but he's not like an amazing passer like Cade.
Yeah.
And so it's like that is definitely something I think that you could take advantage of. But it's also like, you hear people say post up and people hear like inefficient offense. And so I wanted to get your thoughts about that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great distinction. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the intention here is to pass out of it, not necessarily to like take a contested hook shot or whatever, right?
Yeah, draw a double and make plays out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So defensively, I'm a creator and I'm not a negative because I'm 6'8 and smart, the best we can ask for? Or do you think Cade has the potential to be kind of an impact player on that end?
That's a really good question. I would say like, I don't know. If I were to bet, I'd bet against him being some amazing two-way player.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think there are many, many conceivable outcomes to him being an above average on-ball defender. Obviously, you talk about the size. His length is definitely adequate. His intelligence to use legal physicality, legal contact, bump a guy and stay on his hip is good. And I think that kind of stuff probably improves. And I would say, like, in my evaluation early in the season, his defense was much more crisp. He was processing like all, you could see him like, you know, computing all the little variables and adjusting where he was in their zone moment to moment, positioning himself based on, you know, whether there was a guy behind him on the weak side, loading to the strong side, who had the ball, blah, blah, blah. It was really, really good stuff. Obviously intelligent. Obviously he was like a good, can be a very good team defender. Then later in the year, it was like, I cannot maintain that. And also like maintain the offensive load that I have or whatever, for whatever reason, he couldn't do it. So is that an indication of a poor motor? Is that an indication of like, I don't know, poor natural stamina, right? Some guys just have great natural stamina. Some guys don't. So maybe he'll never be able to really exude himself defensively or something. I don't know. That probably has a lot to do with the context that he's in the NBA. I can't imagine, though, that in the playoffs, he's not going to be a positive defender. Like when he's really locked in, there's a lot of financial, social, peer pressure kind of stuff. I cannot imagine that he won't be like a good, really engaged defender. Is he going to be like a Paul George on ball? I don't think so. He doesn't necessarily have all of the defensive gifts that a lot of like the top shelf on ball like wing defenders have, but I can't see him really being a large negative. So I don't know. Did I even say anything? Maybe I just kind of mealy mouthed my way out of like an answer.
No. I mean, I heard some things, right? I heard you won't have to hide him in the playoffs, which I think is important. Yeah. We're seeing now the importance of not of having no significant weak links defensively in the playoffs. I think that's been a lesson that I've been trying to take away from this playoffs. We've been seeing the advent of multiple coverages during games, like changing coverages during games. And if he's a guy who can process it, can process that into the floor well enough, when not tired from absorbing the rigors of a 30% usage rate, then I feel comfortable about him, you know, being able to absorb and play multiple coverage as well. And I think that'll be important, in the long term. But I do think the athleticism questions that we talked about a little bit earlier also kind of rear their head on defense, right? It's a lot easier to be good on defense if you're just an insane athlete and engaged on that end. And so, him not being an insane run jump guy or an insane, slide, I put my arm on you and you can't move anymore guy, but kind of rears its head as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Did that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. The best guys for sure are like the combination of amazing feel and whatever anticipation amazing on ball defenders have, and usually some kind of length and strength, right?
Right.
And like the flexibility to take deep angles and then stop on a dime and recover like your momentum and then explode back to contest like a fadeaway or whatever, like that Paul George is so freaking good at and that Kawhi is really, really good at. Like the next shelf of great on-ball defenders is a lot like amazing balance and strength. And I don't know that Cade necessarily falls into that bucket either, although like his body control, athleticism, and intelligence is really good. But there are so many really, really high impactful off-ball defenders, which frankly I think is much more important. It's not like on ball doesn't mean anything, but like your off ball defense I think generally matters a lot more, just because in the highest levels of basketball you're focused on as a team, as a unit, stopping their best players and forcing them into their weaknesses, and that's not easy to do, and you have to make a lot of, you know, good reads in the moment in things that you maybe haven't seen exactly in that way before. And Cade has that, right? So I'm not saying he's going to be like a Robert Covington, like king of deflections. That's not what I'm talking about. But he's definitely going to be able to make early decisions. So his positioning should be reliable, I think, which is great, which is definitely like above the floor of what like you're asking for when it comes to the playoffs.
Right. And I mean, like, honestly, you play a lot more off-ball defense than you do on-ball defense generally.
Yeah. Yep.
And so like if you had to pick one, I guess it's better to be better at the thing you do more often. I don't know though.
that's tough. I mean, we're getting kind of like, what does it mean to be more important, right? Like we're getting into kind of some nebulous territory, and so you can kind of argue both ways, and I definitely hear you. But Yeah, I mean, there's one ball. There's only one guy can be guarding the ball at a time, and there's four other players. So, yeah, like I do think that's kind of a thing. And obviously for bigs, it matters a lot more, right? Like they are the primary off-ball defender, usually like the first help on drives and stuff. So, you know, obviously for them, that matters a lot more. But yeah, wing defenders, when people are going small all the time in the playoffs, you know, protect the rim by committee, help and recover, that stuff matters a ton.
No, absolutely. Shooting. Cade, really good shooter, over 40% from three. The shot versatility is what I'm more curious about. The pull up is I really love the way he organizes himself on his pull ups.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you, since you're smarter than me, if that organizing principle makes you think that he has any upside as kind of an off motion shooter. I mean, like, not like he's going to be Duncan Robinson or anything, but just like, again, like with the post-ups, I'm trying to envision like more ways that he can attack a defense that aren't just like I'm dribbling and a guy sets a pick at 28 feet.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I reject the idea that I'm smarter than you. Let's, I'm not ready to go there yet. But I do think that a lot of his mechanics and his body control, how quickly he gathers, how quick his shot is, and how, I mean, it's more of an aesthetic description, so it's not really that meaningful, but his shot is so easy and he gets to like the functional part of his mechanic so quickly and easily that there was a lot of, okay, so he didn't have a lot of like motion, heavy motion stuff, right? That's like super valuable in the NBA.
But he had the ball in his hand a bunch at Oklahoma State, right? So
yeah,
there's
exactly,
not the opportunity for him to do that type of thing.
Exactly. And also, it wouldn't even make sense like for him to run a lot of like complicated staggers and like pin downs off ball because of all of the like the lack of shooting that was on his team. It was like no one else was pulling any gravity. So it didn't make a lot of sense to do that. But in like sidelines out of bounds plays, baseline out of bounds plays, you know, you see that stuff a lot where he's, you know, he sets a fake screen, fakes one way, rolls across two screens, back opposite toward the ball, catches, turns and shoots, you know, just like a long two on the baseline or just like outside the 3-point line in the corner. Like those kind of plays are super common. And he was awesome in those plays, just stopping, recovering his momentum, you know, going in like the opposite direction, planting, turning and quickly getting a shot off as the defender is tracking him. Like that stuff was there. So I don't know. Yeah. Like you said, what are the realistic expectations for him? I talked about Paul George a lot, but for some reason he's just in my head. I don't know because
I mean, the Clippers are playing right now. So
yeah. So he's probably not at the Paul George level, but like Paul George will do a lot of just like simple pin down stuff or like have the ball, get rid of it, and then come back to it and curl around a screen, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, have the balance and length to kind of shoot over somebody and read, and like more importantly, read how his defender goes, right? So if his defender goes under, just to be able to stop, turn and shoot that, like that kind of stuff, I envision Cade being able to do. Of course, that's going to be like context dependent. Does he have like a smart big to play the DHO game with? And, you know, what are his teammates like as far as skill sets and stuff? But like, I think that's reasonable for you to expect him to do that at some level. Like, of course that's very difficult, like shooting off movement threes and being asked to do that in the playoffs, like being really efficient at that, that's hard to do. So is it likely? No, but maybe we put it at like 40 or 45%, right? Which is like as good as you're going to get in terms of certainty on stuff like this.
No, absolutely. That, and you actually kind of took me into my next question, so thank you. What kind of a roster would you build around Cade if you were Troy Weaver and if you were making personnel decisions? What kind of other players would you want around Cade to accentuate what makes him great?
Yeah, so I think this is super easy. I mean, this is like he is the cookie cutter big wing creator that like every NBA team is drooling for. And, you know, you want to put versatile shooting, good perimeter defenders around him. And, you know, ideally you want to pair him with another good creator, right? Like most of the best teams have two of them. So there's no like secret, like where you have to kind of build a team around a guy like a Ben Simmons or a Trae Young who have obvious weaknesses. He's not really that guy. He's like the perfect guy because he allows you to go in whatever way you happen to acquire talent, whatever avenues are open to you, right? Because like the idea of like building a team around a guy is great in theory, and certainly certain archetypes matter that you should try to find. But like, you know, having free agents open to you at a time, like you don't know whether guys are going to decide to come to you or not, or trades are going to happen at the time when you have the right assets and the team where the disgruntled star wants to, you know, come from, whether he wants to stay with you or whether you have the assets that they want or whatever. Right. So like a lot of it's just out of your control in terms of team building.
Mm-hmm.
But he's as easy as it gets. Cause it's like, what kind of team do you want to put around LeBron James or around like Paul George, Kawhi Leonard? You just want to put around as much talent as you can around them. Obviously shooting is best to help these guys in spacing, and like two way guys is always great, obviously. But like, there's no, like, I don't think cookie cutter recipe that you have to have for him. He's kind of like, just get me talent. I am the easiest thing to fit around.
Okay. I wondered because, you know, you mentioned the cookie cutter, and, you know, we talked a little bit about this during the podcast. I wondered if it was good to go quote unquote, like heliocentric, where he is the only creator you have on the floor and the rest of the guys are you know, shooting and defense. Also, it's kind of funny to just be like, what kind of team do you want to put around Cade? It's like, I don't know, like four other 6'8" dudes who can shoot, pass and defend, right? Like the same thing everybody else wants.
Like Steph Curry and Draymond Green, like, you know what I mean, just like good players, like
But I did wonder, like, if he's going to be, I don't know if he's going to be the quote unquote point guard of this team, especially since Killian's in play. I don't really think that matters. Again, like creator is not a position per like the however you define position. But I do think
Who cares who brings the ball past like half court, right? Like I don't, like Ben Simmons did that. Like, are we worried about like calling him something or not, right? Like, we know what he does on offense, so we're not super concerned about, you know, where he is at the 20-second mark on the shot clock. Anyway,
well, Simmons is actually an interesting case for me personally, but we, like, that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
It's just like, you want another, if he's the guy who's going to be a really good team defender, you will want another really good on-ball defender to handle the wing assignments that you don't necessarily want him taking. And so my hope is that that's somebody that's already on the Pistons roster, whether that's Jeremy Grant, whether that's Sadiq Bey, whether that's somebody soon to come. But I don't necessarily see that guy on the roster right now, but I do think that is one thing that the team will be looking for in the not too distant future once Cade is there.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. I mean, a lot of like, even guys that are like really one-dimensional in that way still have value in the playoffs. Like, for instance, I'm the worst with names. If you listen to my podcast, you know that sometimes I'll just like be thinking of a guy and can describe a bunch of other traits besides his actual name. PJ Tucker. I stalled for long enough and I got it.
Nice.
PJ Tucker, you know, not even very good at his quote unquote his shot, right? Like the corner three from what is it? Particularly from like the left side, which is like his side. And he's not even that good at that. And yet he had a ton of value in that Nets series, obviously. And then in other matchups, he's not going to be as valuable. So like those guys, you can definitely find as you're like building a championship roster, you can kind of find on the margins as needed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. What in your mind, what does the like I don't want to be greedy. What's like the 75th percentile outcome for Cade Cunningham?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think like second best player on a championship team, or like 1A, 1B on a championship team. Maybe that's aggressive for like 75th percentile outcome.
Mm-hmm.
No, probably lower than that for 75th percentile outcome. Like, let's be reasonable. It's cool to like get excited about this guy who really is that prototypical wing. I can shoot, I can pass, I'm smart, and I'm big. All that's like, that's really exciting. But probably like second or like third best offensive player on a championship team, probably like second best offensive player on a championship team, whether he's like the actual second best player overall, I don't know, but like probably the second best offensive player on a championship team, on like on the average championship team. Like, there are definitely theoretical roster constructions that could win a championship where he is the best offensive player, but then also has a teammate who's like, you know, relatively the same quality of offensive player or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's, I know it sounds crazy because these guys don't come around very often, but I think that's what it is.
You don't have to apologize for what you think, right? Like,
it's just, I don't know. It's just like when you look at the numbers, you go back through draft history, it's not very realistic that you find one of these guys. And mm-hmm. even when they're built as such, most of the time they're not that. And I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be a top five. I'm not saying that a 75th percentile outcome is a top five NBA player, right? I'm not saying he has to be in the shelf of a Steph, a Harden, a Durant, a LeBron, an Embiid, a Jokic. Like, I'm not saying that's the 75th percentile outcome, although that is like an outcome, a higher outcome for him. Like, that's, he could get there. But, you know, the tier kind of below that, where you're still good enough to like, you know, win a championship, but you have to have, you know, two other guys with you probably.
Paul George. I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's kind of a theme, but like, yeah, I was thinking it, didn't want to say it, but thank you.
No problem. Okay. I mean, I think that is not what the fans want to hear right now, obviously. It's like, hey,
why?
We got
why do you say that?
Well, because people want to think that they're going to draft a top five player, right? And yeah, the expectation, you're always selling hope, like with the number one pick, right? The expectation, yeah, is you're going to draft this guy number one. He's going to turn around the entire fortunes of your franchise, and you're going to win a championship in 7 years, right? Yeah. But like that's the fairy tale, and life doesn't like occur like that. So I think it's important to say, like, you know, hey, you could get a top 25 NBA player and he's on your team, and like, you have a shot at a championship if things go your way in certain years against certain opponents, right? I think of the year the Blazers made the Western Conference Finals, right? Like, mm-hmm. you have if everything breaks your way, like, you have a shot at being a high level team, but that's not guaranteed, and you shouldn't act like it is, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that also said, right, his ceiling still remains higher than other prospects you're going to find in this draft, right? We talked about how he's the number one prospect in this class for a reason. If,
yeah,
you know, Cade's 75th percentile outcome is, you know, the second best guy on a championship team, it's like, what does that say about some of the other prospects in the top three, in the top four, right? And so,
yeah,
you can only draft the guys that are in the class, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't think this is a situation where it's like a Greg Oden, Kevin Durant kind of thing, where there's like two guys and like some people like the other guy, like Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. At the time, there were some guys that were like, hey, no, Ingram's right there. Like, maybe, like, he's the top guy. Or a lot of people said that he was the top guy. That's not really the situation. Maybe I shouldn't say that. In my mind, it's not the situation. There are some people that like Mobley. I've heard arguments for Mobley. more recently over him, but like, I think in my head, it's like just him and only him.
Okay. How would you compare Cade to other top flight prospects we've seen this decade? Like, I think Cade goes number one, like last year, for example, but
yeah,
he's probably not, like, I would take Zion over Cade. I would take, I would take Luka over Cade, for example, and Luka went fifth, right? So not even going to go there, but, but where do you think Cade stacks up among the like other top flight prospects?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I think he stacks up really well. I mean, just to think about the number one overall picks over the last few years, like Anthony Edwards, Zion Williamson, DeAndre Ayton, who, I mean, probably should have been Luka, right?
Mm-hmm.
Markelle Fultz, obviously he's a...
That's a special case.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know...
I mean, like, anyway. You probably have some insight into that I don't, but that is a special case.
Yeah, I wish I did. I wish I had. Yeah. Anyway, Ben Simmons, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, John Wall, Blake Griffin, Derrick Rose. I mean, we've recently had a slew of like overall picks that weren't necessarily great, but like when you get back to like 2012 and back, the Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, John Wall, Blake Griffin, Derrick Rose, like those are all really good players. Cade, I think is about, I think he's a slightly above the average number one overall pick. Like, I don't know that he was quite like the Anthony Davis level prospect or the Karl Anthony Towns level prospect. Those guys were like, you know, kind of flawless. I don't think he's a Luka level prospect. Like, I was heavily involved in scouting like Luka. But like overall, I think he's an above average number one overall pick, which kind of projects him into being a perennial all-star kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, spends a couple years maybe of his career flirting with a top 10 overall player in the league. And then, you know, maybe if you're lucky, you know, he spends a few of his years of his prime like flirting with a top 5 overall player, right? But I don't think he's a LeBron James flawless. He's not that, right?
Right. Okay. Now that makes sense. It's been funny to watch an exercise done over at the website I do editing for, where they're trying to answer this exact question, and it's been funny to see some of the names. They were going with the top 3 prospects, and so it's funny to be like, how good was Jabari Parker? Like, I kind of remember like he was really good, but like how good was Jabari Parker before, you know, his knees betrayed him, right?
It's like
how good was Bradley Beal back in college? So it's been an interesting thought experiment to go through.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, gosh, time warps your perception of these guys. There's like a hindsight bias and all that kind of stuff. But like, of what I can remember thinking back, like Cade's better than like a lot of guys that we could ask that question of. Like, I do think he's an above average overall number one pick. So yeah, take that for what it's worth.
No, I mean, you do not hear me complaining about getting the number one pick, right?
Yeah.
All right, Sean. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Let the people know how they can find your work and how they can support you.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was fun. It's great to talk about like really good players. I love that. I can be found on Twitter at @OtaOden. And my podcast, the Stepien NBA Draft Podcast, is what I do. I usually post stuff at thestepien.com. The website, and then I have a Patreon for Patreon episodes of the podcast that I'll do, and you can find that at patreon.com/SeanDarenthal. So yeah, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it.
No, were you a big Greg Oden guy?
I grew up in Ohio and was like pretty much indoctrinated. I was a Buckeye guy, so
gotcha.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Sean. And we'll have to do this again sometime soon for some of the lesser known or lesser heralded, I should say, draft prospects. Yeah. Pistons have 3 second round picks. I don't know what to do about those.
All right. Yeah, man, for sure.
All right. This has been Pistons versus Everybody. Thank you all for listening. And yeah, I don't know. It's the off season. I'll talk to you guys in the future. See you.